Thank you for tuning in to Voices for Freedom, an anti-human trafficking podcast. We want to acknowledge that the content we discuss can be emotionally challenging and may evoke strong reactions. The stories we share often delve into tough subjects related to human trafficking, which may be difficult for some listeners to hear. Our goal is to raise awareness and promote understanding of the complexities surrounding human trafficking. Listener discretion is advised. Coming up on Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast.
This is a woman that was struggling to make ends meet, was working in a job that was very low wage, cleaning houses, met an Uber driver, befriended her, and then eventually asked her to move in with him. But that became a very troubling situation. He was taking money from her, so she moved out and found a place of safety. But he found her, as often traffickers do, and tracked her down, snuck into her room at night, and threw acid on her.
Welcome to Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast brought to you by Our Rescue. I'm Matt Osborne, Global Ambassador for Operations and Education, and we have just been so thrilled with how this podcast has gone so far and the episodes we've been able to put on to cover the depth and breadth of what we're doing in the United States and around the world. Today, we have an extra special treat, but a lot of pressure now that I'm really feeling to interview my new boss and our CEO, Tammy Lee. Tammy, thank you so much for joining us in studio. And as you know, and I don't know if this is good or bad, I've been the longest serving member of Operation Underground Railroad, almost 10 years. So I think that puts me in a good position to know what kind of leader we need. And I cannot tell you how excited I am to have you on board. How has it been even just in the first few weeks? We'll start with that question.
Well, Matt, thank you for welcoming me to the podcast. It's been a phenomenal start at OUR and Our Rescue. The people here are so committed to mission, and I've been able to see up close the amazing work that we're doing not only here but around the world. And I think we're going to get to talk about some of those excellent things that we're doing for survivors today on this episode of the podcast.
Well, thank you so much. And I know you've done a couple interviews already. There have been some press articles. But for our audience who is getting to know you for the first time, if you wouldn't mind, talk to us a little bit about your extensive background, maybe first just as CEO and even before that, and then we can transition to why anti-human trafficking issues are so near and dear to your heart and a great part of your previous background, expertise, and skill set.
Well, thank you. And it's so exciting to be here leading Our Rescue. As I mentioned, I'm so privileged to be working with you and with this team. And this really is my life calling. I started out my career in TV news and then crossed over to politics, but I've always been a very mission-driven person. I spent a lot of time working in the airline and travel industry, and as you know, the airline industry and hospitality companies are absolutely deeply committed to raising awareness of trafficking issues and also being part of the solution. So when I work for the airlines, for Delta Airlines, Northwest Airlines, they do a lot in the airports and a lot of training with the station managers to identify signs of trafficking, as well as with our flight crews, mm-hmm. with the flight attendants and pilots. So I got to be part of that work when I worked in as head of global corporate affairs for Northwest and Delta Airlines. Then when I went to Carlson Companies, global hospitality company, they are well known for their work in the anti-trafficking space. Right. Marilyn Carlson Nelson was one of the earliest pioneers in the anti-trafficking movement and really raising awareness. And she, it's a privately held company, so in privately held companies, you have the liberty to do things that you can't always in other companies. But she, against the advice of the general counsel and the board, was adamant that Carlson was going to be a leader on talking about anti-trafficking and anti-trafficking in hotels. And general counsel and PR, all the people told her, do not do this, because then people are going to think that it's happening in our hotels. And she said, Matt, it is happening in our hotels. So if we don't do something about it, if we don't rise up and be part of the solution, we're part of the problem.
Right, right. And I think that's so interesting because so many of the service providers, airlines, hotels, human trafficking is happening in their face, in front of them every single day. And as you know, at our rescue, we say, we have a phrase, the eyes don't see what the mind doesn't know. So if the mind doesn't know that this is going on, the eyes would never see it. And we've had a chance in the past with AirAsia over in Asia, with some of the hotel chains as well, to talk about that type of issue, what to look for, the signs of trafficking. But I'm curious because, again, on this podcast, I've talked about my own experience with the U.S. government being asked to work this issue back in 2006. And I admit, I'm embarrassed now still to say it, I thought it was prostitution. I thought it was volunteer and willingness. Whoa, was I wrong? So for you, what was it when you first heard about this issue? What were your preconceived notions, if you had any before that? What really hit you over the head? And what was it that lit sort of a fire in your heart to say, regardless of what I'm doing in my future career from that moment on, some part of it was going to be fighting child exploitation and human trafficking?
You know, what's really interesting, I was really naive when I came into the work, I think. I thought this was something that happened in countries far away.
Same here.
In dark alleys, in poor parts of the world. And it does happen there, but it happens right in our own backyard. I live now between Minneapolis and Salt Lake City, and there's a lot of organizations that are involved in the anti-trafficking cause there, because any place that there's a port or a port city or an airport, you have people that are being trafficked
right
in your own backyard. So what I had to learn was this is not happening far away from us. It's happening everywhere. And while I was at Carlson, speaking of working with the government, I got to be part of the White House Interagency Task Force to combat human trafficking. And Carlson, or Marilyn Carlson Nelson, was the very first person to receive the award from the White House on that.
That's right. And how long ago was that?
That was back in 2014.
Okay.
Yeah, around that time.
Which is really interesting because, as you know, it was really only in the early 2000s when our laws started to change to allow us to be more proactive, to allow us, you know, I'm talking U.S. government, Homeland Security Investigations, FBI. And then I think it was civil society who was sort of leading that charge. But then afterwards, it was corporations, wasn't it, who were thinking about this. And just to kind of wrap up a little bit on sort of your career, what would you say before our rescue, what would you say was your proudest moment or achievement in the fight against anti-human trafficking in terms of some of the corporations you worked with and then what you were able to do to shed light on this?
Well, fortunately, we were in the position to be a donor and a funder for a lot of this work, especially in the education and awareness area. And working with national NGOs and foundations like the World Childhood Foundation, who really, they really are a leader in this work. And everything takes resources and money to do that good work. So to be a funder in that area, also to get to speak out on the cause and in support of the work that needs to be done. But now that I've come to our rescue, the things that I get to see every day is my next proudest moment. My first week here at corporate headquarters, I got to meet with one of the survivors and meet her new baby.
Yes.
And to see her smile and her hope and what a wonderful mother she is, it just lit up my heart and my soul to see that. So every day is my next best day.
Yeah, and that's amazing. And that was one of the heroes from Venezuela, correct? And in one of our podcast episodes, we talk about that rescue in Haiti, these amazing Venezuelan women. And yes, the fact that they now are happy and healthy. As we get towards the end of the first segment, we'll spend the next one talking more about the really transition. But I want to go a little bit back. You've told me before, you weren't looking for a new job. You were happy where you were. What was it about then sort of Operation Underground Railroad, and then obviously we'll talk about the transition to our rescue, but what was it about our organization when you saw the job offer? What intrigued you the most, and then what were some of the things that you were so excited about when you got here? You talked about mission, but I just love your story. We're like, hey, I was happy. I wasn't looking for a job. I could have been just fine where I was.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you get a calling that you weren't looking for, as you said. So I own my own company. We manufacture cool therapy products in Red Wing, Minnesota. And I love that work. There's a lot of mission behind that too, and what we do with women's health in particular. But this popped into my LinkedIn feed. And I think it's because of the work that I talked about with Carlson Companies and the airline. Something flagged an algorithm that popped that into my inbox. So whether it was a LinkedIn algorithm or a message from God, it showed up for me. And I hit the easy apply button and didn't think about it. And got a response from the recruiter right away. But I ignored for 6 days in my inbox because it was in my Gmail file. So I had to have a really in-person calling from her to remind me about this. And once I started the interview process and saw the 10 years of amazing work that Operation Underground Railroad, now our rescue, has been known for. Boy, this is something that I could not say no to. And in fact, it wasn't just a not no, it was an absolutely yes. I want to be part of this.
That's amazing. And what we'll dive into a little more in this episode is, again, what you bring to the table in terms of possibilities for fundraising and corporations, centers for excellence, but also the anti-human trafficking background. And then that idea of being able to sit back sort of at a 30,000-foot view and see some of the changes. So very excited to have you. We'll wrap up this first segment of Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast brought to you by Our Rescue. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. A big thanks to our sponsor, Our Rescue Store, for supporting our podcast. The Our Rescue Store is committed to responsibly sourcing products that ignite conversations about human trafficking, raising awareness, and contributing to the movement against it. With more than enough colors, designs, and items to choose from, there's definitely something for you. Find something you'll be proud to own and be an advocate for change. Visit store.ourrescue.org and use the promo code VOICES10 for 10% off your purchase. That's VOICES10 on store.ourrescue.org. And welcome back to Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast brought to you by Our Rescue. We are interviewing our brand new CEO, Tammy Lee. We're so excited to have you at the helm of our organization. And last segment, we talked a little bit about your background, both in the corporate world as CEO of your own companies, focus on anti-human trafficking initiatives, what it was about then Operation Underground Railroad that caught your eye. Now let's focus on the transition to Our Rescue. You've only been here a few weeks, but it's been so excited to see the whirlwind of activity. What did you first see as the main items that needed to be tweaked and changed, evolved, and perhaps if you want, we could even start internationally, sort of our original bread and butter?
The basis of Operation Underground Railroad really was about rescuing victims of slavery. And there are, you know, there are cultural connotations that come with that here in the U.S. that don't maybe make as much sense internationally. I know international operators have had to explain what Operation Underground Railroad means. So really trying to respond to being a globally focused organization, but also culturally sensitive to the Americas.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, as we've always said, right, it was only with the most esteem and respect for those heroes of the movement at that time with the Underground Railroad, but absolutely. So this transition now to Our Rescue, I was fortunate for years to be involved in international operations to see kind of how we did it back then. Obviously, Sound of Freedom, the movie, got a lot of acclaim and a lot of focus, which is good. But you know, those that operation was 9 years ago, and we've evolved even before you coming on. But what I love now is seeing how you are empowering our international team first and foremost. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and what you're most excited about seeing in the various regions in which we're operating overseas?
Yeah, there's so much exciting work happening internationally, and I think at the roots, a lot of the operations, and you were part of them, were really about going in and kind of kicking down doors and rescuing victims. And then, of course, arresting their traffickers and putting them in jail. We still may do some of that rescue work, but we're doing it much differently than we have in the past. And whether it's international or here in the Americas, we really work in partnership with law enforcement. So we link arms with them. We're not going in as independent operators, knocking down doors and doing this on our own. This is really done in partnership and collaboration with law enforcement, which mm-hmm. I know you've seen firsthand.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's good. And I think that there's unfortunately still a misconception sometimes that we're a vigilante organization, right? Absolutely false. Has never been that way, even since the very beginning. We go in through the front door or we don't go in at all. But what I love now is seeing you start to spearhead this movement of putting more assets overseas, hiring locals who have, again, the cultural sensitivity, and let's be honest, allow us to stretch our donor dollars farther. Salaries are less, right? You're not flying people overseas. What are you most excited about in terms of our new, senior vice president of global rescue and survivor support, the teams that we already have and those that you are starting to build now with some of our new hires?
Well, yeah, the very first week here at headquarters, the first hire announcements that I made were the international global operations and survivor care team. So I think that shows the level of importance that I put on that as part of our mission. But what is equally important in how we've really evolved beyond the rescue operations, which are critically important, we will do those. also the support we do for law enforcement, but putting survivor care on equal par with the rescue operations or partnerships with law enforcement. That is an evolution of how we think about the brand and how we think about our mission. And by moving from Operation Underground Railroad to Our Rescue, we're really talking about OUR as the collaboration between our organization and law enforcement, the collaboration between us and the country leads, the collaboration between the country leads and ops and how they work with our survivor care teams. So OUR is really inclusive about how we view our mission and how we actually do our mission.
I think that it's important to emphasize that this has been going on in so many parts of the world already. It just didn't get the focus. It just didn't get the stories. And we'll talk a little bit in a minute about how we're going to focus on stories. But what I think is amazing, and I hope you get out there soon, is to see the gold standard of our international team, which is our Thailand team, right, as you've seen. And that's something we've worked on for years. And what I love now about what Tammy is doing is saying, okay, let's replicate what we've done in Thailand and other places. Because, again, it's going to be much better to have locals in country working with their law enforcement counterparts than, again, just flying people from Texas or Utah or Minneapolis or however. But the question I want to ask now is what you've seen in terms of cyber, the need for digital forensics, for cyber expertise, open source intelligence. I know you're talking about a center for excellence centered around just an amazingly qualified gentleman who worked for almost 20 years with the Department of Justice. But what have you seen now as you've come in terms of the importance of the cyber aspect, the online aspect in fighting child exploitation and human trafficking?
Well, Matt, that's a really good point because as we've evolved from kicking down doors to do the rescues, so much more of the work that we do is technology-based and technology-focused. So creating a center of excellence around cyber operations really allows us to do that in partnership with law enforcement. So while we'll have a center of excellence that's based in Florida primarily, but with also some NGO partners and expertise in Washington, D.C., those partnerships will also extend to in-country operations for cyber ops and providing local law enforcement with the tools that they need, whether it's technology tools or ability to analyze data that they're getting. That's such a critical part because we've moved from being kind of brute force to high tech, and that's the evolution that we're making with the Center for Cyber Operations.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I've seen, and again, just tangentially, leading these undercover operations for years, is how much of it has gone online for certain overseas, but also in the United States, and that's a good pivot now to what you're most excited about in terms of our domestic program. Obviously, we're going to have a podcast episode on our canine dogs. Who doesn't love the dogs? But as you see domestically and have come to learn that Our Rescue is as active, if not more active, in the United States than around the world, and now you're getting to see it firsthand.
Yeah, so what we do in the Americas really is those deep partnerships with law enforcement and supporting them and supporting their needs. What I'm also excited about is we're working with a lot of other nonprofits that are active in this space where we're going to link arms with them to give them additional bandwidth. So even though we're creating some of our own centers of excellence, we're also partnering with others that are already excellent in that area so that we can achieve a broader mission without having to build it ourselves. And that's something that I'm really excited about here in the U.S.
And you and I were at an event last night, stayed in the southwestern part of the United States, and we saw that, didn't we, where we had Our Rescue give our presentation about our global and domestic support, but then someone in state government would talk, then someone in aftercare. And that really is the focus. It's also, too, showing that we are all about collaboration. We're all about inclusivity. I, for the many years, saw some of the criticisms and thought, well, maybe a little bit of that is fair. Most of it's unfair. But now I think there should be no doubt that we want to partner with anyone, don't we, who's willing to work and advance this cause. And we're willing also to offer our tools and expertise to ensure that we're always about collaboration.
That's right. And that's why this pivot to Our Rescue is really important. And even the logo, people are very familiar with our logo. It's very recognizable. But it has been more of that sort of heavy chain link look to it, which fit with Operation Underground Railroad. Now you see a softening of that. And instead of really focusing on it as a chain that we're trying to break, looking at some of those links in there is how we link arms with other partners, with law enforcement, with survivor care organizations. So not only evolving the brand, but evolving how we talk about our logo and marks as well.
Yeah, and I love that in the past, right? We're breaking the chain. Now we're going to build the chain, fill in the chain here on the U and the R. In our last segment, we'll talk more about survivor care. I want to keep that. So in the time we have left in this segment, two last issues. One, you talk about Centers for Excellence, our cyber center in Florida. Do you care to talk about something that I'm excited about, and it's your background as well, lobbying, Washington government, and also fundraising corporate, maybe the two other Centers for Excellence for now, hopefully there will be more, in terms of those vital, how do you advocate for legislation policy, and let's be honest, how do you raise the lifeblood donations to allow us to support partners in the U.S. and around the world?
Well, thank you for that question, because we're really excited about some of the partnerships we're already building in Washington, D.C. So we will have a center of excellence there around education and advocacy, how we partner, how we pass laws that get at the traffickers, and also a lot of the laws are around cyber crimes and sexually explicit material. So we're going to be working with other nonprofits and be a very vocal force on Capitol Hill to help get some of these legislative changes to happen. In terms of the advancement, there's a lot of expertise in Minneapolis. There's a lot of expertise here in Salt Lake City. But you and I have talked about, too, centers of excellence might be around content area, but they don't have to be location and place-based per se. And I'm really excited what you and I are working on is a new center in Texas focused, because there's a lot of interest there. We've got a lot of support. So sometimes we call it a center, but it's not place-based. It's really focus-based. And that's what this Mission Advancement Center is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm proud Texan, North Texas. You see, that's the confluence of people with the heart and the means. We have a lot of domestic needs there. You obviously, the Mexican border issue, all of that confluence. So Texas, I think, will be a huge center for excellence, and twist my arm to help as much as possible in that state. As we wrap up, as you know, this problem is so vast. As important as our rescue's efforts are to support law enforcement in the arrest and the rescues, you can't arrest your way out of this problem or rescue your way out of it. You can only do it through community engagement, through education and awareness. Talk a little bit about your plans, which I'm so excited about. End of July, World Day Against Human Trafficking, in terms of the community engagement that we're going to try to do in a few different places around the United States.
That is what I'm most excited about domestically now as we look ahead, because we are going to have Homecoming Week here at the Salt Lake City headquarters, bringing people in from around the world to really relaunch our look and our mission and recommit to that as a company and as an organization. But we're also going to be doing a campaign called Rise Up for World Anti-Trafficking Awareness Day on July 30th. And there will be activities here where all of our employees are engaged in doing work that's in the community and of service to others, but also around the country and around the world. So we will be doing events in cities near and far, probably in Texas, Matt. Yes. I hope we'll have some going on there. But that's also getting other groups involved. There are a lot of people that are faith-based that want to do a faith and action project. And around Rise Up, there's an opportunity to do that. We've got lawyers and judges that are reaching out to me that want to be part of this solution. So I feel like that there's something in this for everyone. Yes. Whatever your passion is, whether it's survivor care, medical, dental, the canines, there's something for all of us to get involved in and to be part of the solution.
I cannot wait. It's going to be great. I've been involved in some of these in the past. This is going to be the biggest and best one yet. And what it really does as well is show us as responsible players in the awareness field, in the education. And that's what I'm grateful that you've given me this opportunity to do podcasts like this. And I could talk for another 30 minutes, but we do need to take a break. And when we come back in our last segment, it's where it all comes down, where the rubber hits the road, what's the most important thing, and that's the survivor. We're going to talk about our survivor-focused aftercare. But do not go anywhere. You're listening to Voices for Freedom, an anti-human trafficking podcast brought to you by Our Rescue. I want to thank today's sponsor, the Our Rescue Store, for supporting this podcast. Did you know the Our Rescue Store features survivor-made items? In this critical fight, they serve as symbols of hope. By choosing to purchase one of these beautifully handcrafted items, you will impact the healing journey of survivors and help them reclaim their lives in the process. We encourage you to shop survivor-made items on the Our Rescue website. It might only be a few dollars to you, but it makes a world of difference to them. And in case you need any extra motivation, use promo code VOICES10 for 10% off your purchase at store.ourrescue.org. That's VOICES10 at store.ourrescue.org. Welcome back to Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast. I'm Matt Osborne, Global Ambassador for Operations and Education. It's my privilege to have with us in the studio today our new CEO, Tammy Lee. And Tammy, thank you again for being with us. Thank you for your leadership. We've saved the most important for last, and you mentioned it earlier in the program, the survivors. And we have always been a survivor-focused rescue organization. Sometimes that hasn't gotten the press, that hasn't gotten the stories because of the need to protect identities as it should be. But what was it specifically in terms of survivor care that you saw when you came in and when you realized, all right, we are making the transition from Operation Underground Railroad to our rescue for a lot of reasons, but at the top of the list, wasn't it, is the survivor.
Absolutely. It is the survivor care of our mission that is what I'm most passionate and excited about, because I don't have the law enforcement background that you do or working in that area, but I do have a heart and a passion for the survivors and the women and children that we help rescue. And as we've evolved our branding to the, which we've been talking about on this segment, from our rescue to under that, our operations, our survivor care, our education, survivor care is the one that I am very excited about, because that is where we truly do our mission work. And their needs are so great and their stories are so compelling. And I think in the past, people thought seeing the rescues was what would get people excited. For me, what gets me excited about getting up every day to do this work is hearing the survivors go from survivors to thrivers. And I think we've got a couple of great examples of that today.
Yeah, we really do. And, you know, back when I was fortunate to be on the operations teams and we would work with law enforcement and we did some of the old style operations. However, we would play the role of the middlemen, right? And we would get arrested. And I was always so sad because the survivors looked at me as the jerk, as the creep, and you wanted so much to say, no, we were there to help. I love how our aftercare team has evolved. I love how we are doing all we can to be trauma-informed and victim-centered approach. But what is it specifically that our supporters can be looking for in the weeks and months to come in terms of the stories they might see, or at least to let them know a little bit about what's going to be going on behind the scenes as we always try to keep the survivor first and foremost?
Well, as you know, you've seen the survivors up close, and you've seen after the rescue, they need comprehensive, compassionate aftercare. And that ranges from meeting their basic needs, medical and dental care, and we'll talk more in detail about that, to helping them with their mental health issues or helping them with housing. There are so many needs, but it really starts with the basic need of medical and dental. Without being healthy, you can't go on to live your most full and exciting and opportunistic life. And we want them to be on a path to joy, but you can't be on a path to joy if you haven't had your basic needs met.
You mentioned in the first segment that you had the wonderful privilege of meeting one of our survivors on either your first day or one of your first days at work and her new baby, and she couldn't have been happier. And again, I was involved in that operation in Haiti. She was from Venezuela. And I've seen pictures now that Jessica Mass has shared, you know, internally, and the smile on her face. But I understand you've come to know a couple of our other special angels, special survivors. And, you know, we obviously won't use their name. But how about the one who, when it comes down to dental, to smile, a smile says everything. And we don't have our smile. We don't have anything. Talk a little bit about first about this amazing individual.
So this woman said that she did not feel like she was a person or that people were seeing her. She had some dental issues and never wanted to smile. She wasn't letting her own light shine because she didn't feel good about the way that she looked. So our survivor care team found a local dentist for her to fix her smile. And boy, her smile is the most beautiful smile I've ever seen. It's like a 1,000-megawatt smile.
Yes.
And you see her smile and you just see it's given her a whole new lease on life. How she views herself, how she views the world. And she's so grateful to the survivor care team for helping make that possible. But that work is also only possible from the support of generous donors, as well as this dentist who gave his time and talents to make her dream come true and make her life so much better.
I'm so grateful to all the specialists who give their services pro bono or at greatly reduced cost. As some of our followers and supporters know, we are trying right now to raise funding to help a poor girl from Africa come to the U.S. for life-saving surgery. And we're just now working on a few of the visa issues with the government. But as you know, Tammy, we already have lined up the aircraft, the stretchers, the medical providers, because people are drawn to this. And I imagine that's something that, and you've said it before, it's what gets you out of bed every day, right, to work on this issue. It's the survivor.
It is the survivor, and everybody that I talk to resonates with that mission. And when I tell people about the work that we get to do here at Our Rescue, an Uber driver that brought me to headquarters this week, I was telling her about the work, and she said, how do I get on your support list? Because I want to pay for somebody to do a tattoo removal for somebody.
Oh, that's incredible.
And I said, we actually have a whole support services area where if you email us or call us, we'll put you on in our database. So when we have that kind of a need, we can reach right out to you.
Yes, and love that people want to get involved. You know, talk about the tattoos, and we've talked on other episodes, and we'll have other episodes talking about domestic trafficking, that these traffickers oftentimes brand their product, and it's horrible. Imagine that with the tattoos off, or the woman you talked about with the smile. Let's pivot a little bit now, and again, just in generalities to protect her identity, but how about the woman you've come to know through video and anecdote and story? What has that done for her with the support of Our Rescue?
Yeah, Matt, you know, that is one of the most horrific stories that I've seen in my short time here at Our Rescue. This is a woman that was struggling to make ends meet, was working in a job that was very low wage, cleaning houses, met an Uber driver, speaking of Uber drivers, that befriended her and that eventually asked her to move in with him. But that became a very troubling situation. Mm-hmm. He was taking money from her, so she moved out and found a place of safety.
Right.
But he found her, as often traffickers do, and tracked her down, snuck into her room at night, and threw acid on her.
All over her face when she's sleeping. Most horrific.
Most horrific. And she got to the hospital, but in some of these rural hospitals in Africa, they just don't have the resources to be able to deal with something which was such a traumatic event. So they had to send her to another hospital for care, and she didn't have money. She didn't have the money to get the care. And with that, that meant she had no hope. They were going to discharge her and send her home to die. It's a story that has a horrible beginning, but a very happy ending. So she has come to the U.S. She's had multiple surgeries. She still has more surgeries to go, more healing to do. But you can tell she does feel like she has a new lease on life, and she feels loved and lovable. And we think about how much our own image, whether it's our smile or our physical appearance, that really, how we view ourselves, we really tie to our own self-worth. Right. And now that she's been able to have these life-changing surgeries, she's got a whole new lease on life. And she is a beautiful woman. And she's a woman that anybody would be lucky to love.
Yeah, she is beautiful on the inside and the outside. And, you know, one of the disadvantages of being in Texas is I don't get to participate in some of the Utah centered events, but I saw footage of her welcome at Salt Lake City International Airport when, if it was, I remember correctly, Jessica said, these people are all for you here. Mm-hmm. And it was the Our Rescue employees clapping and the smile on her face. And what's neat as well is that, yes, we still provide her some support, but she's now working. She now has a livable wage. She has a job that she's proud of, just like the Venezuelan woman you talked about. And that's what we really are trying to do, isn't it? It's sort of for the one. Now, we've assisted in the rescue, the rehabilitation, the effort of, you know, thousands. And we're very clear to say some of it was our absolute on-site help. Others were supporting organizations to do it. But it is really for the one. And if all we did ever was for this woman with the smile, the woman with the face, and the woman with the baby, it would have been well worth it. But we're not stopping there, are we? And what is it about this exponential effect that we have had and can have on survivors moving forward?
What I think is really exciting about being part of this funding basic medical and dental needs is you are really transforming and changing someone's life. And so whether you get passionate about dental care or medical care, people can join in this mission with us. They can donate specifically to that cause if that's their passion area. Just as people that are dentists and doctors can volunteer or give their services pro bono to us. So this is an area that I get the most excited about, because if we can change somebody's outlook on themselves, it changes their outlook on their world. And that's why this work in medical and dental care is just so meaningful to me.
Well, I love hearing that, and I'm so excited. This won't be the last time we have you on the show. We'll definitely have you on again closer to July 30th. But I'll give you the last word before I wrap up, but the last substantive word. What would you say to those in the audience who may have heard some things, read some things, may question our organization? Now you're in charge. Now it's our rescue. Now we've talked about why we are an organization that we are both proud of. Because you and I have talked about, if we thought for 1 minute the mission was tainted, the organization trade, we'd be long gone. I mean, you still have two of your own companies to run, right? I do other things. But what is it for our supporters to know that this is a group worthy of supporting? And truly, this will be cliche, the best is truly yet to come.
Mm-hmm. Well, Matt, I will say that this has always been an organization worth supporting. And now we're just very clear about our commitment to mission, which is the partnerships with law enforcement, which is the commitment to compassionate survivor care, which is our commitment to being a leader in this fight, but a leader that links arms with others. So our rescue is really about positioning ourselves as somebody that is deeply committed to the cause and redoubling down on our efforts to do everything the right way. We want to be the North Star of the anti-trafficking movement, but we don't do that alone. We do that in partnership with others. So our rescue is an invitation for everyone to join this fight with us.
Yeah, absolutely. We invite everyone to join our rescue to support. We invite other groups out there to partner with us. And I'm just grateful to have our new CEO, Tammy Lee, here with us. It was a lot of pressure. If you don't see me on future episodes, I obviously screwed up and did something wrong. But on a serious note, thank you, Tammy, for joining us. Thanks for your leadership. And thank you so much for supporting Voices for Freedom, an anti-trafficking podcast. Be sure to join us for the next episode. We're so grateful to have your support.
Thanks for listening. Did you enjoy this episode? If so, please leave us a review and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have ideas for future episodes, email us at voicesforfreedom@ourrescue.org. Lastly, we encourage you to join the fight. Make a difference today by donating at ourrescue.org or text podcast to 855-944-5646. Again, that number is 855-944-5646.
Hello, listeners. I invite you to join us next week as we have an amazing guest on. Michelle is the founder and CEO of Empowered to Change International. She's going to talk about how survivors are trafficked within the prison and how she is actually making a difference in life transformation for these survivors. So join us as we listen to Michelle in this interesting conversation in a way that you might not have seen how trafficking is happening in the United States.